Now, BC Hydro was created in 1962 when the government of BC under Premier W.A.C. Bennett passed the BC Hydro Act. This act led to the expropriation of the BC Electric Company and its merging with the BC Power Commission to create the BC Hydro and Power Authority. This allowed for the development of major power projects that are the backbone of the electricity system today. Between the 1960s and 1980s, BC Hydro, if you can believe this, completed six large hydroelectric generating projects alone in between the 1960s and 1980s. Today, of course, it generates and delivers electricity to 95% of the population in our province. That serves over 5 million people. Well, our guest, Chris O'Reilly, built his career at BC Hydro, starting as an engineer in training fresh out of university in 1990. He has held positions throughout the organization across the province during his career, including working with customers, leading operations, overseeing capital projects, and managing risks for BC Hydro's trading subsidiary, PowerX. Today, he is the president and CEO, and he joins us now. Chris, thanks for your time.
Oh, well, good to be here. Thanks, Jess.
Yeah, lots to talk about here, but I have to ask you this question. You rarely find people who start at one company and have stayed there. What's kept you at BC Hydro all this time?
Yeah, you start out, you don't plan for that kind of career.
No.
It just kind of happens. And for me, it was always just really, really like the people at BC Hydro. There was a good fit in the values for me with the organization and great work. So, you know, you start somewhere and you end up 34 years later and spend a lifetime there.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
And you got a wide, wide amount of experience in all facets of the company, which is very important. Let's start with Site C just for a moment. I know there's lots for us to talk about here. That was a project originally estimated to be built for $8 billion. It's gone to $16 billion. It's about a year behind schedule. And I understand you're probably going to be filling the reservoir next year. Or this year, sorry.
This year.
Give us just a breakdown of where you think we are and what we can expect over the next year or so with Site C.
Yeah, we're almost done. So if you were up there, you would see the main, the civil structures, the large, the dam and the various elements are pretty much finished. Mm-hmm. We're working inside the powerhouse to getting all the electrical and mechanical equipment going. And we're on track to start filling the reservoir in late summer. And expecting, based on that, to have power ideally before Christmas.
Before Christmas.
Yeah.
I was mentioning in the introduction of the amount of dams that were built between the 1960s and in the 80s. In 20 years, roughly, all those dams were built. Not all of them, but a significant chunk that is the backbone of the system now. And this one has been sitting on the desk of elected officials, and you and I are talking during the break, since the 1980s.
Yeah.
Is it more challenging to build just on the engineering side, mm-hmm. to build something like this for Hydro? Because we're not making as many. The environmental demands are so, and the regulatory demands are so strong that do you still have the institutional knowledge and history within that company to build a project like this?
Yeah, those are great questions. I think first thing, it was a lot harder than anyone anticipated for all kinds of reasons and related to the site and the current regulations and expectations. So mm-hmm. that was, unfortunate and that the cost increased, and we certainly take accountability for that. We have a commitment to a renewable energy future. And I think today when we look out, likely that means resources like wind and solar and potentially things like geothermal. I think it's going to be a while before we see another large hydro project, partly because of the environmental.
So this is... The challenge
of those kind of things.
So, but this is probably the last large scale hydroelectric dam we will build in this province.
I would say for a while. You don't want to say never, but I think for a while we're going to see resources like wind and solar.
Okay. Now you talked about wind and solar. You have a call for power, mm-hmm. and we're going to learn probably a lot more of that about that in the next few months from BC Hydro. From what I've been reading, it looks like wind is going to be the main focus. You said wind and solar here, but wind especially. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, there's been quite a lot of technological advancements over the last 10 years in both wind and solar, and the cost of those resources have really come down, and we're looking for good responses from both, from developers, mm-hmm. and expecting a good response to the call.
Do you worry, though, that the complaints you're hearing in states like Washington, there's been some pushback on some wind farms there, proposals there, and other states as well, that it's not sort of 100% slam dunk when it comes to these projects. Are you expecting the same here in regards to the pushback to some of the concerns people have over wind power?
Yeah, and I think, well, first of all, we have about 10 wind farms around the province of varying size, so we have some experience with them, and I think the province has some experience, communities and such, and we recognize that in certain places there's, you know, there's not going to be a good fit between the community and the local circumstances. I think generally there's a good support for among the public and from First Nations and stakeholders for renewable energy, including wind and solar. So looking forward to the response and the response from communities as well.
Sometimes the sun doesn't shine, the wind doesn't blow. The hydroelectric dams that we have, some of them are, you know, quite old. But boy, I flick on a switch in the studio and it works, and it's always there and it's constant. Do you think the transition that we're making is too fast?
Well, I think it's measured for certainly from our experience here in British Columbia, and there is a good complement between the intermittent wind and solar resources and our hydro system, which is flexible and we can move it up and down, and when we've got lots of wind, we can store that energy behind our dams. So. We have a good capacity to integrate more renewable and energy, and that is really key to the energy transition in BC, to ensuring we have enough to meet the needs of our customers.
I'm quite interested, when we talked about Site C, once up and running, you're going to have, you know, every elected official that I meet, doesn't matter the party, you know, this will power this many houses. This will power this many LNG plants. Everybody's already speaking for all the energy your company's going to be generating. Do you worry that too much is being put on the shoulders of BC Hydro in regards to you're the main catalyst for this energy transition? Because I think that's actually quite unfair, because technologies change and it's no one company can be carrying that burden.
Well, our climate plan is not all about electrification. It really calls on emissions reductions from a whole range of pathways in the province, including things like building efficiency and renewable natural gas and hydrogen and any number of things. And to be successful in the energy transition and our climate plan, we need all the sectors to deliver. I think right now, electrification is most present and available for our customers who want to take action today. And so that is putting a lot of expectations on BC Hydro, and we're factoring that into our plans. And that's partly why we're announcing the power call, partly why we've announced the capital plan and are ramping up our expenditures, really to meet the needs of our customers who are looking to us to meet their needs.
If you could get a do-over when it comes to Site C, what would you do differently?
That's a great question. I mean, even at the higher price, it makes sense, right? So I think you could have added in more contingencies and more reserve to help deal with uncertainties, and those do occur on a project like that. You know, it's hard to go back. We benefited from interest rates being lower. We've benefited from power prices. The value of power has risen in the intervening years. We've actually benefited from the inflation to some degree because we, you know, locked in parts of it before. So I think when we look back, we'll be happy to have it, even at the higher price. And in a generation or two, it'll still be producing power and providing value to people in BC. And people will say, great that you built that for us.
We are speaking to Chris O'Reilly, CEO and President of BC Hydro. We're talking about the energy transition. And, of course, we all know BC Hydro plays a big role in that. And it's the largest crown corporation in our province, the fourth largest company in the province as well. Chris, let's talk a little bit about dollars. The government has announced, and you've announced, Hydro, a very ambitious capital project in regards to spending money moving forward over the next 10 years. I think it's $36 billion. Mm-hmm. Where does that money go?
Yeah, well, the capital plan is about ensuring that our system is there to meet the needs of our customers. So a good chunk of it, about $21 billion, is going into sustaining capital, sustaining our existing facilities and ensuring they're there for the future. And then the balance, about $15 billion, is going into growth. So new equipment, new lines, getting power to where our customers need it.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked about spending dollars. We're talking about building capacity with Site C. But there's some things you have no control over, and that would be Mother Nature. Mm-hmm. We just did a segment prior to your arrival on the forest fire season starting earlier, mm-hmm. earlier with a professor at UBC. Drought has impacted BC Hydro's ability to power the system. How do you move forward from mm-hmm. that?
Well, we're used to managing the ups and downs of water in our system. Every year it's different, and we have a whole range of experience around that. This is a very severe drought, and we're at the edge of what's been experienced over time. We have a whole number of tools that we use, including we've got great people that work on planning the operations. We have the ability to import. We have contracts in place. We can move our reservoirs up and down. So we're managing through this challenging circumstance, and I want to ensure our customers know that they can have confidence in our ability to deliver.
Now, the comments that BC Hydro was a net electricity importer because of the drought, can you just walk me through? Because there's so much information flying around that, you know, you've got other special interest groups saying that we still need to keep traditional fuels around because of even the challenges BC Hydro has. So, you know, let's say you have a drought. How do you go about addressing it? Mm-hmm. Let's say in regards to Powerex or purchasing or imports, yeah. How do you deal with it
sure.
at the management level?
Sure. So the main tools we use are moving our reservoir levels up and down to give us more generation, and then we use imports to make up the difference. So, for example, if we need more energy, we can import power from, say, the United States, from California, for example. We use that power to meet our customers' needs in an hour, and then we hold the water back in the reservoir, and we're able to have that water for later use. So, you know, we've actually after going into the winter with relatively low reservoirs, we've been able to get our reservoirs up to pretty much normal levels going into the spring. We've got a reduced snowpack that we're watching for sure, but we're in a pretty good place from the reservoirs as a result of all the management. So it's a pretty active process, and we've got great people that are doing the planning, the forecasting, the trading, all the things you need to do to ensure we have enough power to meet the lights, keep the lights on here.
Keep the lights on. Now, part of the problem is also just growth. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier about, you know, elected officials already saying what Site C will be powering. But mm-hmm. the reality is we have tremendous growth in our general population. Mm-hmm. You've got a tremendous draw on power when it comes to iPads and EVs, electric vehicles. Yep. Right? And then you have the industrial side. I think one large-scale LNG plant that's being built like LNG Canada, if you had a couple of those, that would eat up mm-hmm. The vast majority of Site C's power just alone. And then you add mining and forestry to that, or even Bitcoin. And I had the energy minister here on a couple of weeks ago talking about this very issue. You know, do you think we're going to get to a point where we're going to have to pick and choose what industries we say will move forward just because of the draw on power from them?
Yeah, and it's a great question. So just so you, for context, the last 15 years, the demand for power in the province has been pretty constant. So we've not seen a lot of growth, mm-hmm. and we are starting to see that now, and we are forecasting significant growth from all the things you said, the population, the electrification, the development of industry. There are more, you know, there's never been so many industrial customers, potential industrial customers here in BC, and some of them very, very large. We had the experience with the Bitcoin, and given all the things we want to do with electricity, including meeting our climate targets, I think there is a need to start to make some choices. We're not really set up for that. We're set up to say yes to customers, and I think you're seeing more and more jurisdictions around North America starting to have to say yes to this customer and no to others. And that is a public policy issue, and governments will have to deal with that.
Yeah. I get mayors sitting where you're sitting sometimes, and I'll talk to them privately. And one of the things they talk about is, well, the government wants us to build new housing, greater density, all those things. I can't get a substation out there to power my yeah. subdivision that I want to put in. And it's not necessarily a complaint specific to BC Hydro, which is the growth has just been so fast and it's so steep as well. Are you having challenges just putting in more mm-hmm. power for subdivisions in Metro Vancouver?
Well, the development of housing and and commercial development in the Lower Mainland is profound and absolutely critical given the shortage of housing we have. And, and we're working really hard with our customers and with municipalities to get infrastructure in place. We had a great example with Surrey last week where they were expanding 64th Avenue, and we took the opportunity with them to put our ducks in the ground. So we avoided the situation where they pave the roads and then we come along and dig it up, you know, six months later. So we're working really hard to coordinate with municipalities. We're updating our extension policy, which is the way we charge for new customers. So that should make it more efficient. So doing a lot of things to smooth that process. We recognize the tensions around serving new load.
My final question to you, all these dams we built under WAC Bennett and since, and they've met the needs of this province. Now we're going to wind and solar, potentially a new call for power, greater investment infrastructure. Have we lived off the past now that we must now aggressively look at building more capacity moving forward? It's all good to say we made some tough decisions 40 years ago and we've done well with it. Now is the time to start thinking perhaps that we've got to start betting big again so we at least have that reliable power over the next 40 years?
Well, we absolutely have to invest in the system, and that's what the call for power is about, investing in the system in the province. The capital plan is about investing in the province. We've significantly ramped up our conservation efforts as part of our integrated resource plan. And of course, we've got Site C. So that's a current investment that we're making. So I think this generation is making the investments necessary to support the growth of the province and leave a good legacy for the next generation.
Chris Raleigh, it was nice to meet you. Thanks for dropping by.
Yeah, great to meet you, Jess. Thanks so much.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think French fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.